Chapter 42. Dr. McCammon entered the Numa computer center just as Jaeger hung up the phone to Mongolia. On the opposite side of the console, the holographic image of Max turned toward the marine geologist and smiled.
"Good evening, Dr. McCammon," she said.
"Working late?"
Good evening," McCammon replied, not sure if he should feel foolish for conversing with a computerized image.
He nervously turned and greeted Jaeger.
"Hello, Hiram.
Long day?" he asked, noting that Jaeger was dressed in the same clothes he wore the day before.
"Very," Jaeger replied, suppressing a yawn.
"A late request from the boss yesterday kept us busy. We expected to see you hours ago."
"Some unexpected meetings managed to kill most of my day. I understand if you didn't get a chance to retrieve the data from the earthquake center," McCammon offered.
"Nonsense," Jaeger replied, as if insulted. "Max can multitask with the best of them."
"Yes," Max replied, "and at least some of us keep our demeanor in the process."
"We pulled in the data last night," Jaeger continued, ignoring the comment, "and ran your program early this morning. Max," he said, facing the image of his wife, "please print Dr. McCammon a copy of the program results. And while that is running, why don't you give us a verbal overview of your findings?"
"Certainly," Max replied.
A large laser printer at the side of the room immediately began humming with the printed output while Max chose her words.
"The data received from the National Earthquake Information Center reflected global seismic activity for the last 5 years, including the two large quakes that just recently struck the Persian Gulf. I ran your software program, which analyzed the two earthquakes, then filtered their key commonalities against the entire database. Interestingly, there were several unique characteristics associated with the two earthquakes."
Max paused for effect, then stepped closer to Jaeger and McCammon before continuing.
"Both events were classified as extremely shallow earthquakes, as their epicenters were less than 3 kilometers beneath the surface. This compares to most shallow focus earthquakes, which are typically in the 5 to 15 kilometer depth range."
"That's a meaningful difference," McCammon said.
"Of less significance, both were tectonic quakes rather than volcanic in origin. And, as you know, both were large quakes, measuring over 7.0 on the Richter scale."
"Isn't that quite rare to have a pair of quakes with that magnitude?" Jaeger asked.
"It's a little unusual, but not unheard of," McCammon said. "An earthquake of that size in Los Angeles would capture plenty of attention, but the fact is there is a 7.0 magnitude or greater earthquake occurring on average once a month somewhere around the world. Since they mostly strike in non-populated areas or under the sea, we don't hear much about them."
"That is correct," Max said, "though there is a statistically significant anomaly in that the two quakes of that magnitude struck in such close proximity."
"Any other similarities, Max?" Jaeger asked.
"Yes. Though difficult to quantify, it appears that the damage produced by these earthquakes was not commensurate with their size. Significant structural damage was recorded at both sites, which exceeded the norm for similarly sized earthquakes. The actual damage was more reflective of what an 8.0 magnitude quake would produce."
"The Richter scale is not always an accurate measure of an earthquake's destructive power," McCammon noted, "particularly for shallow focus events. In this case, we had two shallow quakes that proved highly damaging. The intensity on the ground was likely much higher than the magnitude rating indicated."
Max frowned briefly as she rifled through her databases, then nodded at McCammon.
"You are absolutely correct, Doctor. The primary seismic waves were much smaller in magnitude than the surface waves for both quakes."
Anything else, Max? McCammon asked, finally finding a comfort level with the image.
Yes. One final aspect. In both earthquakes, there was a record of low-magnitude P waves registering before the actual quake-induced waves occurred.
Foreshocks, I suppose, McCammon said. Not at all unusual.
Will somebody kindly explain all this surface wave and P-wave business? Jaeger asked tiredly.
Max shook her head.
Must I teach you everything? Elementary seismology. The slippage from a common tectonic earthquake generates three types of seismic energy releases, or shock waves, if you will. The initial wave is called the primary, or P-type wave. It has similar properties to a sound wave, able to travel through solid rock and even the Earth's core. A slower and hence secondary wave is called an S-wave.
The S-waves are capable of shearing rock sideways to the direction of travel and produce the damaging vertical and horizontal movement of the ground when they reach the Earth's surface. As both types of waves approach the surface, they refract to produce additional surface waves, which create the bulk of the shaking that is felt on the ground.
I see, said Jaeger. So they are essentially different frequencies sent out from an earthquake's epicenter.
That's right, McCammon said.
Is there a large fault line in the area where the two earthquakes struck?
The Persian Gulf actually lies near the boundary of two tectonic plates, called the Arabian and Eurasian. Nearly all the seismic activity that takes place around the world is in narrow zones surrounding the plate boundaries. The large earthquakes we've seen historically in Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan would suggest that these two quakes in the Gulf were not extraordinary, but for their proximity.
I guess your friend at Langley won't have too much to chew on, Jaeger said.
I can't imagine, McCammon replied. But thanks to Max, he'll have plenty of data to peruse. As McCammon walked to the printer to retrieve the output, Jaeger threw one more question at the computer.
Max, when you ran Phil's filter program, did you match any other earthquakes to the same parameters?
Why, yes. It would be easier for me to show you graphically, so feast your eyes on the video board. A large white screen behind Max was suddenly illuminated with a color map of the world. Two flashing red dots appeared in the Persian Gulf, marking the recent earthquakes. A few seconds later, a flurry of red dots erupted in several clusters, concentrated in an area of Northeast Asia. They were followed by a lone flashing dot slightly north of the others. McCammon set down his reports and approached the map in curiosity.
A total of 34 seismic events were identified from the National Earthquake Information Center's data as matching the characteristics of the two sample earthquakes. The most recent occurred just over a week ago in Siberia, Max said, pointing to the lone red dot.
Jaeger's bleary eyes widened in shock.
And the locations of the other events? He asked. Primarily Mongolia. 15 events occurred in the mountains east of the capital of Ulaanbaatar, 10 in the southern Mongolian province of Dornogov, and another 9 in an area just across the border in China. There was also one event in Siberia, at Lake Baikal. Mongolia, Jaeger muttered, shaking his head in disbelief. Slowly rising to his feet and rubbing his tired eyes, he turned to McCammon.
Phil, he said, I think you, me, and Max are going to need some coffee.